Your ATM is safe. Your banks are safe. There's enough cash in the financial system. And there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve. An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I have been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now.
Arbitrage on this trend has been margin called.
The view was a hook. Trust the view, I don't know, they got me shook. Believe in the crooks. Hell of the same. Are they cooking the books? They up a day and I lost in a day. Another new M.R. just getting away. Bigger the bag. Bigger ripple effect. When it all blows off, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass is not the success. Pull back the curtains and what do you get? And it's the risk with a big tippy net. Made from your savings. And 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialized loss is why we've in the game. First to fall in this reckless war. You're just a pawn in the continuum of this game.
Money talks and pay for the show. Pay for the cloud. Pay for the thrill. Pay for the media to lie to our face. Taught the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us a dream that never delivers. While raking in fees and clipping the tickets. Siphoning funds from the mouthless spigot. Blindly the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Commingled the risks so nobody knows. How far it'll go to a damaged collateral. Another excuse for oppressive control. And government capture was part of the play. Reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help but nobody came. And bailouts were pawns and complainants.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex and fallible humans left unchecked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked. And that our economies are largely X.
What would happen? We take our money out of its systems. Why protest our labor when we get pulled out of capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purchasing power. How do we build a base? Replace the continental defense with the world of free markets.
Give an independent system to remove the risk of corruption.
Step two.
Move the savings into that system so no one can ever touch it.
Step three.
Earn, save, spend, trade. All activities move this way. With our own money, everything changed. Through the log of positivity.
From the fashion world, it's tired of our desire. Earning by work, and with time, earning a larger piece of pie. Or even yours to be earned by. Money is the art of power when we win. That's just the score of politicians. Coming and capturing part of the place, and we reach the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being censored. Move up from gambling, saving. Move up from all the politics. Move onto the air of the internet.
So we don't got to trust every word that they say. So our freedom and wealth can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can keep the control of this game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door, enter the game.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 78 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, and I am joined by AC as co-host today and Bob Van Kirk, and we're going to have Ben Workman, DR Lewis, and Adrian Morris joining us to talk all things MicroStrategy. So I have been looking forward to this one since we finally got this kind of settled last month. This is going to be a fantastic space. I'm going to answer a lot of questions, make sure everybody kind of understands what's going on with MicroStrategy, what Sailor's Playbook is, and kind of what the next 6 to 12 months is going to look like for MicroStrategy. So really quick, I just want to make sure everybody understands the purpose and the reason that we do this every single weekday, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. And that's to show the world what decentralized currency can do. This is what Bitcoin can do. That we don't need a central authority us telling us what we can and can't do. And that with Bitcoin and through its power, we can get off the fiat hamster wheel and we can be completely sovereign. We don't have to be confined by the chains of the people who control us. And it allows us the freedom to move about, and we're more effective that way. And so if this is your first time listening to us, please go ahead and click the Bitcoin Veterans handle. Give us a follow. And if you're a veteran out there listening to us, reach out to us. We have more than about 400 vets in our community, and we're constantly growing. And so we can help you, point you in the right direction, answer any questions you may have. So please don't be a stranger. But I see we're still trying to get Adrian up and Dr. Lewis. But I see we have Ben up here. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I was really happy that we could get this worked out and get you on here. It's kind of a big week for MicroStrategy, with the consideration for QQQ. So it should be a lot of fun. And I see we have Dr. Lewis up here now. Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Always great to join. Love the content. Often can't join right at the 10 o'clock, but I love the recordings. You guys cover a lot of great materials.
No, I appreciate that. And we have Adrian up here as well. Hey, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me up. Excited for this conversation.
Yeah, you and me both. I'm sure all the listeners are as well. So really quick, guys, I just want to make sure everybody kind of understands who you are and where you came from and how you kind of stumbled across MicroStrategy and how you were the first ones to kind of figure out Saylor's playbook with conviction. So Ben or Adrian, if you guys want to go first, just let me know.
Yeah, for sure. I can take it. So I actually started very much focusing just on Bitcoin. And well, I went down my path that a lot of people go down where you kind of stray from what you can understand the value of, which is Bitcoin, and you go play in all the other spaces and you make a bunch of money, you lose a bunch of money, and eventually you learn your lesson that if you know something has tremendous value and you can see a future for it, why distract yourself with all these other coins people are putting out? So I've had my fair share of going down that path and making those mistakes, but I came back, I got my way back to Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's really the core foundation for almost all of the investing that I do these days. And so MicroStrategy, I really found right away when they first announced that they were going to make a Bitcoin purchase. And it was kind of a lazy philosophy that I had at the beginning, which was just that I would support any company that was supporting Bitcoin, right? We were early on looking for who that first corporate adopter was going to be that was going to help bring some legitimacy to the asset class and was going to show the world that there's a bigger value proposition for Bitcoin out there by integrating into the broader network of companies that exist. And that was a really big moment when they made that investment. And so right out of the gate, I invested in MicroStrategy at that time, fully understanding that one, I had no idea what they were going to do with the Bitcoin. I was just excited that they were moving their cash to the Bitcoin. That seemed like a big enough deal for me. But when you start to invest in something, that's what really captures your attention and brings you down the path to want to understand what that company is really actually doing. And to be honest with you, I can't say I really fully understood the strategy probably until earlier this year. I mean, I'd looked at it and I thought it was cool, but it was happening on a smaller scale originally, and small's very relative, right? We reset our scale sizing every time Saylor does something new. But at the time, it seemed like they were, you know, doing some smaller scale stuff, which was very interesting to follow, but I didn't really understand what he was doing yet. At first, I thought it was just a way to get more Bitcoin. So at the beginning of this year, which was really when I first started coming on X, I was just looking for other people that had ideas around this strategy and what it was going to mean. And I kind of plugged into this community out here. It's how I found, you know, Adrian and DR when we were talking Bitcoin miners and MicroStrategy. And then it really started to click for me, this arbitrage he was doing on Wall Street, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a bit, but that really took me down the rabbit hole when I saw the way he was onboarding huge amounts of captive capital and bringing it into the Bitcoin network. And that was something very new that the world hadn't seen yet. So it's been really exciting to follow from there.
Yeah, you're not joking. It's been really crazy to follow to see this, and just the amount of passion and conviction he's had over the last 40 days is unreal. But Adrian, I'd like to hear your story first, and then we'll start diving into some more serious questions.
Sure. So my path is kind of similar to Ben's. I've been in the space for a while. I was a Bitcoin from the beginning. Obviously got involved in altcoins, just like Ben and others. I lost money, I made money. But it brought me to the path of being what you can guess you can say is more of a Bitcoin maximalist, where Bitcoin is my primary focus. And with that, one of the things I got into first as a passive investor was miners, you know, last cycle. That really got me into the idea of what a Bitcoin proxy was, and starting to think along those lines is what brought me closer and closer to MicroStrategy. I actually had MicroStrategy stock at the beginning in the last run with all the mania going on, and I sold because, you know, I didn't know what was really the plan. I didn't have a thorough understanding of it, and I just thought it was going to go up. So that's why I bought it. But I would say around 2022, it was probably April or May, something like that. I started looking at it again, and I started to say to myself, okay, maybe he's on something. I just don't know what it is yet. So me being the person I am, I just bought a position, right? And I started going into it deeper and deeper, but back then there was not a lot of conversation around it at all. So it was something that I was doing very passively. And then I would say the beginning of this year, 2024, is when, you know, you had more people coming in the space with the same kind of questions. So you had Ben, you had DR, you had the Quant Bros, you had, Dylan LeClaire was one of the first people talking about it, rather, frequently and discussing the potential that it could have. And I think that's just what really brought me along and made me get more and more aggressive with my positioning. And the rest is history. It's performed very, very well. I think Sailor's opened a Pandora's box a little bit, in the sense that you're going to have companies that fall into two categories. You're going to have the people that are putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet just as a accretive measure to bolster their balance sheet. And then you're going to have companies that are perhaps trying to do the Sailor play, you know, issuing convertible debts and things of that nature. And I'm really, really excited to see where things go in the next 6 to 12 months, as I think that 2025 is going to be a banger year. So that's my, you know, history in a very, very condensed nutshell there. I was a Bitcoiner that got sucked into the MicroStrategy playbook, and once I really started digging into it and becoming rather involved in the daily conversations, because I talk to Ben daily, I talk to DR daily, all of us talk to each other daily, right? So this is not something that we're doing as a flash in the pan. This is something that we are all actively invested in and have an active interest in. So, that's my story.
Well, thank you for that, Adrian. I appreciate it. And then DR, I'm not going to forget about you. Did you want to kind of go over real quick about how you fell into all of this and how you were involved in the space?
Yeah, super quick. I have a lot of corollaries here. It'd be kind of a rehash. I got into Bitcoin about 2019, and then got into Bitcoin miners and other Bitcoin related stocks as a way to look at some sort of play that, you know, if there was some value with the people who mine this at less than I was buying in on the exchanges and transferring it to my cold card wallet, then there's some sort of arbitrage play there, some way to capitalize. And I kind of got sucked down the MicroStrategy rabbit hole somewhere around December. Actually, looking, tomorrow was my 1 year anniversary. On December 11th, I cashed out a lot of my IRA tech portfolio, mostly Microsoft, and went full on into MicroStrategy at what would be a cost average about $50 per share. So I'm doing well, but that's not really the point. I didn't really understand the play, much like Ben and Adrian both said in December. I got into X really in January. I had an account for a long time, but wasn't active on it. Maybe had 200 followers. Started getting involved around January, engaging the community, talking to people, Adrian, Ben, and others that have been mentioned, and doing content, understanding it more. And somewhere around spring, the light bulb really went on for me with what Sailor was doing. And it continues to go on as he explains it. I think his recent presentation regarding the MicroStrategy board of directors proposal, which actually is taking place today, and his explanation about digital currency, I still find more nuance in his play. So at this point, I'm firmly engaged in this value proposition.
Well, thank you, DR. And I think it's kind of funny how all three of you said the exact same thing, the Sailor play. So we're going to have a lot of first time people finding MicroStrategy. A lot of us who are just kind of unclear. So do one of you gentlemen want to just explain what the play is and why it's so significant?
Yeah, I can start with that one. So MicroStrategy was really the first company to convert over in a big way to a Bitcoin standard. And what that really means is that Saylor identified all the pitfalls that a lot of us have really come to understand, you know, more recently about what it means when you're holding significant sums of US dollars in the reserves for your company. So the very first thing that he identified was, if you have an asset like Bitcoin that's not tied to any nation, nobody can play games with the supply around it, it's a fixed supply asset, and if that asset, if the value of it right now is denominated against a currency that does have all those other traits where you have inflation and debasement and you have a central authority that's manipulating it to try to, you know, create certain results in the economy, the asset with the fixed supply is always going to be much stronger than the one with the fluid supply. That was a huge change in thinking as a corporation to say, even if all we did was take our cash that we don't really have a way to deploy, right? MicroStrategy had kind of reached this point where they were generating a lot of cash, but they didn't have any real good ways to deploy it into the business. He'd been fighting against other giant corporations like Microsoft and some of the others that do business intelligence. And it was a really tough area for them to grow their BI business. And so he was looking for something else, because when you get to that point as a company, the decision you're really starting to make is, if I can't generate any new value for my shareholders, then I've got to look at what are the other options for me to return value to them. And what most companies ultimately do is they'll end up issuing dividends, which is basically an acknowledgement by a company that they're out of growth ideas, right? They're not viewing themselves as a growth company. They don't have ways to accretively deploy this cash to scale the business up and generate more revenue and more profits. So they start giving it back to the shareholders, right? That's what dividends are. Otherwise, they start looking for things like acquisitions. And is there another company we can deploy this cash to go purchase that we can integrate into our own company to make us stronger, bring us a new product offering that we can bring to the market to help us grow that way? And the problem with that model is most of those integrations fail pretty miserably. It's very tough to integrate two companies together and find the right synergies to make that work. And so Saylor looked at another area and he said, we've got a new emerging asset that's out here in Bitcoin. And what we also have is a very strong treasury. And treasury is a very overlooked component of most organizations. Every organization out there is going to have a treasury department. But typically what that treasury department's been doing is basically just kind of deploying their capital into some short-term investments and making sure that they'll be able to free up that cash if they need it for operations. So they're out, you know, buying things like T-bills or other, you know, investments with that cash for kind of a short holding period. And what he said was, we're going to do that differently. We're actually going to turn our treasury department into an active department. We're going to actually have them go out and engage with the capital markets, and we're going to find ways to get more Bitcoin for our company and more Bitcoin for our shareholders. And what they had was strength. And I've used this analogy a few times so that people can really understand it. But for traditional companies, we really evaluate them based on the income statement. And we're looking at revenue and bottom line, and we're looking for growth in both of those metrics. And that's how the market starts to value these organizations. And if you look at that in your personal life, it's essentially like saying you only focus on your income and what your take home pay is after expenses, right? What Saylor did was he shifted their methodology as a corporation and said, instead of focusing on the income side of the house, which they'll still focus on, that's still the core business, we're actually going to focus on the balance sheet. So in your personal life, that would be focusing on your net worth and better deploying the assets we've built, because getting a 10% return on substantial assets is far more impactful to the overall value than getting a 10% raise on the income side, right? So that was the fundamental shift in thinking that Saylor had, and he went out and tasked his treasury department with finding ways to better deploy that capital. And that originally came in the way of borrowing money from banks and being able to take that money and do an arbitrage, which basically just means capturing the difference between two things. But They were capturing the difference between the rate they had to pay to hold that debt and the annual returns of Bitcoin, right? So Bitcoin had been providing 50, 60% annualized returns, and the debt would require them, you know, 6, 7, 8%. So they were basically trying to capture that difference. But then he evolved a little bit from there, and he said, we need to find new customers. And he realized that there's tremendous value in volatility and volatile equity in the markets. And when we say volatile equity, what we really mean is a stock that moves a lot, right? That's what that means. And so he embarked on creating a new product. And in order to create a product, which was volatility, and offer that to the market, he had to identify who are the customers for this product and what do they need. So he started evaluating where's all the capital on Wall Street and what are they looking for? And where he quickly landed was the convertible debt market. And the convertible debt market basically means a corporation sells bonds to, you know, an entity whose entire charter is that they can only buy convertible debt, right? These are some of these Wall Street hedge funds. And what those hedge funds really need is a volatile asset, because bonds typically don't move very much because they have a floor price to them, right? The par value of the bonds are basically what you invested into the bonds. But convertible bonds are different because they have a component that works like an option on a stock. There's shares that are tied to the convertible bond so that as the price of the stock itself moves, the price of those bonds also moves. And eventually, when the price gets high enough, the bond actually starts to act like the stock does. So it's going to start to move really closely to the performance of the stock. And what he found was there's billions of dollars of capital that will never make its way into Bitcoin, right? By charter, it wouldn't be allowed to come to Bitcoin any other way. And he converted MicroStrategy essentially into a loading dock for Wall Street level capital. And what he was allowing them to do was come to their company, buy a product that they can buy and are required to buy by charter that's going to have characteristics that makes that product much more profitable for them, giving them an ability to trade in and out, right? They do what's called delta hedging, but we won't go down that path right now. To be able to generate significantly larger returns than they get from a traditional asset that they buy convertible bonds from. And he realized there's billions of dollars here. And if he can create the product that's the best performing product for that asset class, then he's basically going to have people kicking down his doors trying to give him capital. And he's going to be able to take that capital and deploy it into the Bitcoin network and buy Bitcoin to put on their balance sheet. And so it was really quite a brilliant move to go and focus on finding a new subset of customers. Instead of going out and trying to find a corporation to buy their business intelligence product for $250,000 a year, they figured out that they could find, you know, 10 to 20 willing customers, because they do these with direct placement, which just means they're going directly to these firms. This isn't like an open market offer. They're just selling these bonds directly to these institutions. And he now has customers that are willing and really, really excited to give him billions of dollars of capital. And so to the extent that he can get these products out to those companies, he realized that he's essentially able to create this really fast flywheel to accumulate more Bitcoin. And what that does over time is it creates more Bitcoin per share is the yield you'll hear from MicroStrategy, which basically just means if you took the number of Bitcoin and divided it by the total number of shares that are outstanding or fully diluted, right? The ones associated with the bonds, their goal is to generate more Bitcoin per share for their shareholders. And that was a really powerful shift in the markets. It's a different way to think about yield when it comes to companies. Typically, it was yield was just dividend yield was what people were really looking at, or earnings per share growth. But this is a shift, and the market's still digesting that shift, but it's a big departure from how standard corporations operate. So I'll stop there. Hopefully that gives a good overview of what they're doing.
No, that was really good and really thorough, so I do appreciate it. So it's a perfect segue for my next question. If he's having such demand for these convertible bonds,
why right now is he having such a big push for selling more shares and quote unquote diluting the amount of shares available, but increasing, you know, the sats per share? Like, why is he doing such a big push for that right now instead of just utilizing the demand for the convertible bonds?
Absolutely. So they have a risk framework that's in place, right? You'll hear a lot of narratives out there that talk about how leveraged MicroStrategy is. And that's really just not true. It's kind of, I use the analogy a lot that it's like you had a friend that's buying a house, right? And typically that friend's going to take out an 80% mortgage if they go the traditional route. Well, his house is essentially Bitcoin and he's taking out a 25% mortgage on it. And if your friend told you they were taking out a 25% mortgage, you would hardly consider that friend to be reckless, right? That's not over leveraging. So they've got a framework in place to manage the ups and downs of Bitcoin by saying, we're only going to allow ourselves to take on as much debt through convertible offerings as we can support at, you know, the target's really around 25% is where they've hovered. They're right now, they're actually below that. They're below 20% right now. But they typically try to stay around that 25% range. And that's very intentional because to create that volatility as a product, they need to be more than 100% allocated to Bitcoin. And so that 25% leverage is that additional injection that gives them the volatility into the stock. So when they're tapped out on what they can do in the debt markets, they've got to look at the other tools that they can deploy, because when they put out these bonds, they don't know how long it's going to be before they have more space on the balance sheet to be able to do more of these bonds. The bonds are always the most accretive to the metric because they're basically collecting money at future prices. So if the stock's trading today at, say, you know, $100 a share, they were collecting money from these investors on this last offering at $155 a share. So they're getting tomorrow's prices today, and they're able to take that capital and buy Bitcoin. So that's always going to be the most accretive way that they can generate Bitcoin per share. The other way they do it, which is much more flexible and they can execute on much faster, is by using the ATM. And ATM is an at-the-market offering. It's basically the equivalent of you or I selling our stock into the market, except the stock that's coming into the market is coming from MicroStrategy directly. They're selling their own equity into the market at market prices. And that allows them to move very fast. They can really capitalize on days of really high volume, and they can capitalize on price spikes. And in order for that to be accretive to Bitcoin per share, they're capturing a difference between the book value of the company and the market value of the equity. And the difference between that generates that accretion to the Bitcoin per share metric. And so it's been an interesting concept because people typically associate ATMs with being massively dilutive, right? We've seen this in the mining space a lot, because they've made bad collateral for banks, because Bitcoin miners are such specific collateral with the ASICs that it's tough to get bank loans as a Bitcoin miner. So they've had to lean on the equity markets to raise the capital for their growth. And most other companies, you know, almost all public companies are going to have an active ATM offering out there. But what they do a lot of the time with that is they're plugging operational inefficiencies with it, right? They're using that equity to fill gaps in their own operations, and that becomes dilutive to shareholders. Because if all they're doing is paying things like, you know, electric bills or maintenance bills on facilities or salespeople or whatever they're paying, if there's not a direct transfer of value to your balance sheet, that's essentially value dilutive to your shareholders. If it's not directly contributing to growth, if it's plugging losses from operations and keeping you functioning, that's dilutive to the value of a shareholder. MicroStrategies is a little different, and you have to think about that dilution a little different. And if you look at it in two different segments, yes, it's dilutive to your voting rights, but it's not dilutive to your value. Because what they're doing is they're taking that money dollar for dollar, and they're going out and they're buying Bitcoin, which moves directly to the balance sheet of the company, right? Essentially increasing, you know, what you could consider the net worth of the company. And that value lives on the balance sheet in perpetuity, right? And it's got the ability to perform into the future in perpetuity for the shareholders. So it's not value dilutive. So it's a change in thinking, and it was a difficult one, you know, first for me to figure out, because you do traditionally think, you know, more shares equals bad, but you have to really think through, what am I getting for those shares and how are they capturing and storing that value, right? And they're doing it into Bitcoin. So the ATM provides them constant flexibility, right? They can get those approved very fast because they're a known issuer, so they can do it very quickly. And it allows them to continuously generate a Bitcoin yield as long as, you'll hear the term MNAV, which is just multiple on net asset value, or just think of it as the difference between book value and market value. As long as that's greater than one, it's accretive to the shareholders from a Bitcoin yield perspective. So I'll pause there.
So I have a couple questions. One, does MNAV really matter as long as you're looking at the sats per share? And two, with the convertible bonds, so as the Bitcoin price increases, it would mean that their debt that they hold, because they have so many sats per share, would decrease. And so therefore, they could get below that 25%. They can issue more convertible bonds, bring it back up to 25%. They acquire more Bitcoin, the share price increases, the sats per share increase, Bitcoin price increases, and then it's a huge flywheel, correct? That's what the speculative attack is that we're all talking about.
Essentially, yes. So the MNAV is, I think it gets over-focused on, quite frankly, but it is an important part of the strategy to understand. Right. And it's just a calculation, right? So, you know, it's one data point that people are using, but it does become important to certain types of traders, right? There's people that are called mean reversion traders that'll actually trade around mean reversions to the multiple on net asset value. So it's important in that aspect to understand, at least, but I don't necessarily think that it's the most important thing for everybody to focus on. I think that if you're investing in MicroStrategy for the long term, what you care about is that arbitrage that they're capturing and that Bitcoin yield that they're producing, which basically means there's more core value behind each share that you own as time goes on. And so when I put out some charts pretty often, pretty much every time that they do a buy, that tracks both the Bitcoin per share, but it also tracks how many shares you would need to own to have an allocation to one Bitcoin, right? And just everyone needs to be aware that we don't actually have a claim directly to the Bitcoin, right? Like, there's no Bitcoin that are actually tied to your shares. It's the value of the company, and you're looking at, based on the percentage of the equity you own, how many of these would, you know, be, in quotes, allocated to my shares. And what's really cool in that trend when you watch it, and particularly in this last quarter, because he's been very aggressive in pressing this strategy, is the Bitcoin per share has essentially gone vertical. I mean, they are generating a huge yield in Bitcoin per share, which also conversely means it takes way less shares to have an allocation to one Bitcoin. So for reference, right, on a fully diluted basis, last quarter, you would have needed to own 931 shares to have a allocation to one full Bitcoin. As of right now, you would need to own 650 shares. And that's just in the matter of a couple of months. And that is a very, very impressive feat. And that's why I tend to watch that metric, because it shows how well he's executing. And if your thesis, right, you can't have a thesis that's not long Bitcoin and own MicroStrategy equity, right? It just doesn't work, because these two are so directly linked. But if you believe in a very strong future for Bitcoin as an asset class, you can really start to understand what that value is. He's essentially going out and capturing new Bitcoin on your behalf, right? He's got tools in his toolbox that he can deploy in the capital markets that you or I can't do, where just by owning the shares of this company, I can essentially have more exposure to Bitcoin over time without me putting another dollar into it. And that's a very, very interesting and very, very powerful concept, where you can almost kind of look at it as you're accumulating by owning, by holding the equity, right? By allowing him to deploy this strategy. And it doesn't replace Bitcoin and cold storage, right? I'm never an advocate for people saying, I'm going to sell my Bitcoin and buy MicroStrategy. I haven't done that and I never will, right? Bitcoin, I think, is a very foundational part of a portfolio right now, particularly because we just caught our first tailwinds on Bitcoin, right? We've been through the hard part of Bitcoin where we fought and we had politicians pushing against us for, you know, a decade and a half now. And we finally just got the tailwinds behind it. I think that's an asset that you definitely want to own. So I never advocate people selling Bitcoin to buy MicroStrategy, but people have other accounts as well. And you have other assets that are in accounts where you can't buy Bitcoin. Like my brokerage right now still won't let me buy a Bitcoin ETF, which is infuriating. And they're definitely losing my business here shortly, but you know, I could buy MicroStrategy, and that was really one of the first things that pushed me into MicroStrategy was I could get more Bitcoin exposure using those assets that I couldn't get otherwise. And that's pretty important because there's a lot of examples of that globally where people can't get access to Bitcoin in areas where most of their capital is tied up. And so Bitcoin's providing a pretty, or MicroStrategy is providing a very important service to some of those people to be able to get exposure to the growth in Bitcoin long term. So hopefully that covered the question. I tend to ramble a little bit if you haven't picked up on that yet, but hopefully that covered your question.
No, that was perfect, Ben. It covered it. And I'm glad you stated that because I think a lot of people feel that when people are pushing MicroStrategy, they're saying to substitute Bitcoin for it. So I'm glad you said that. It's not a substitution. You should always have Bitcoin. Bitcoin should be your first. And get to your goal before you start playing around with MicroStrategy. Again, as much as we might all, you know, like what Saylor's doing and believe what he's doing right now, again, he's somebody in control. And that's the whole reason why we Bitcoin, because it's decentralized. So it's really important to make sure that you understand the difference between the two. But I just want to welcome, we have Mike Holbart up on the stage, Eomar, we have Bob Van Kirk, and we have, Brandon Terp up here as well. So gentlemen, if you guys want to start asking your questions, you can, but really quick, I just want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Punch plate, self-custody is extremely important. So make sure you stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Check them out at punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Use the code BTCVETS for 5% off your order. And if you pay in Bitcoin, they'll give you an additional 10% off. So potential for 15% off your entire order. That's solosatoshi.com. And last but not least, Bitcoin Alaska. Alaska is an amazing state. I absolutely going there, and we're going to be hosting a conference July 5th and 6th in Juneau. I have a link up in the NAS. Check them out at bitcoinalaska.org. So gentlemen up here on the panel, do you have any questions for Ben, Adrian, or DR?
Yeah, I just had a question anybody can really take. I'm just curious if anybody wants to opine on the Q's inclusion on Friday that is coming up.
And when you say opine, do you mean just give general opinions on what we think is going to happen, or?
Yes, sir. Yeah, what do you think is going
to
happen?
Well, don't hold me to this, but I think that they're likely to get included. And I know there's been some chatter around, well, what if they are not included because they are now more of a financial services company versus a tech company and so on and so forth. I think those are non-starters just because that would be going against their own methodology. I think that Ben and the True North crew touched on this on their call last night. I wasn't able to join, but I caught some bits and pieces of it, and I generally agree because we've talked about this a lot. The inclusion into QQQ is just very, I don't know, formulaic, I guess you can say. There's not a lot of bias that's going to go into it. If they meet the criteria, they'll get included. I think that if they're not included, they'll be going against their own methodology to do so. And the inclusion that is more tenuous in my mind, in my opinion, is with the S&P. I think that one has a lot more layers to it, where there can be some questions. But as far as QQQ, and Ben, you can chime in here, I don't really think there's a threat for them not being included. And quite frankly, even if they're not included, let me just go with that outside case. It doesn't matter, quite frankly, to my investment thesis, because the stock has been doing rather well without QQQ. And I don't foresee them not being included by some twist of fate as anything that's going to derail that activity. If anything, we'll have a few red days, maybe a red week, and then we'll be back to business as usual.
Yeah, and I'd echo the same thing. When you look at their methodology, NASDAQ's much more mechanical than the S&P 500 is. And there's been a lot of speculation about whether, you know, they're going to view MicroStrategy as being a finance company now. That's really what excludes you from getting into the NASDAQ 100. And I don't really see that happening. It's possible. It's going to bum me out a little bit because I've spent a lot of time tracking the QQQ over the last couple of months, so that'd be a real bummer. But, you know, I'm right now, they're definitely a software company from the classification agency that NASDAQ uses, and 100% of their revenue is coming from that software company. And it's a little bit, in my opinion, it would be a little bit dangerous for NASDAQ to single out a single entity because they deploy their treasury better than the other companies, because every company has a treasury, right? And so they would really have to, in my opinion, spend the time coming up with a new methodology for how they're going to classify companies if they were going to say, no, if you deploy your treasury, you know, in this more effective way into an emerging asset, we're going to reclassify what you do as a business. That's a tough sell. So I'm optimistic that they're getting in on Friday. Some of the bigger guys like Cantor Fitzgerald, they also seem to agree that they think that they're going to get in on Friday. But we'll know by the close of the market. And to Adrian's point, yeah, I don't really think it matters, right? I think it would be an awesome benefit because it does provide them flexibility later on. It can do things like, you know, help their credit rating as a corporation so that in the future, if they want to issue different types of fixed income securities, they can get better terms on those. So I think it does help them if they get in. But I think there's enough demand because they've created such a valuable product that ultimately it's not going to matter, but I'm rooting for inclusion on Friday.
I don't know if you saw it, but NASDAQ actually, I think, preemptively wrote an article about MicroStrategy and some of the nuances to how they're operating last week. And I kind of see it as a preemptive strike for maybe some of the scrutiny they're going to see for including them, despite the fact what you guys lay out, I think is true that, you know, it's pretty calculated as to how they would be included. So thanks for answering the question.
Yeah, it's possible. The other thing to look at is the chairman of Invesco is also an investor in many companies that are in the digital asset space. And so that's Invesco is the company that issues the QQQ. So to the extent he has any say or any influence in how that methodology is done, you know, as the largest fund that's tracking the NASDAQ 100, I think that bodes well. But no, I haven't seen that article yet, so I'll go take a look for it, and it'd be interesting to see what they were saying.
Along those lines, maybe I'm getting too nebulous here, but if we think about the distinction between a finance company and a technology company here, is Bitcoin money or is it tech? It's both, right? If we really want to get into that. So I think that we're going to have a fundamental reclassification as years go on into the separation between finance and tech. Because by definition, if MicroStrategy is bolstering or, in my terms, weaponizing their balance sheet with Bitcoin, they're doing it with the asset, yes, but they're also fundamentally doing it with the technology. A technology that's backed by a physical network, that's backed by energy, that's backed by resource allocation. It is purely tech. Bitcoin exists in cyberspace. It does not exist in physical space. So to say that it's not a technology company by using a technology to bolster their balance sheet, I think is opening the door for quite the quagmire if they weren't to be included. So it's something that I don't really lose sleep over because, as I said, and as Ben has said, I'm sure DR will feel the same, it doesn't matter. Numbers are going to go up regardless because this is a sound thesis that Saylor's operating under. So I wouldn't get too much heartburn over it.
I like that thought, if I can just make a comment. I think it's you know, you got to envision a world where most of these companies, regardless of their industry, are copying MicroStrategy to some extent. Now, is it a full on treasury reserve asset for everyone? No, but, you have to imagine that, this is only going to get, copied, and therefore for Wall Street or others that look at this to completely redefine everything, I guess it's possible, but I mean, when everyone's doing it, you're not going to start saying, you know, a company that does healthcare that has Bitcoin on its balance sheet is, you know, a financial company or a tech company. You're going to call them still a healthcare company. So I don't know. Maybe somebody wants to speak to that.
Well, so, and that's where we're getting into all the nuances, right? I think that if, so let's use a corollary to Semler Scientific. If Semler Scientific were doing the MicroStrategy playbook at scale, are we going to all of a sudden say that they're not a healthcare company? Or that they're not a healthcare analytics company? Or that they're not involved in healthcare just because they are leveraging Bitcoin in their balance sheet? I don't think we can, right? And in that case, it's an entirely different example, because then Bitcoin being a technology, in my mind, at least just thinking through this example very, very high level, is less of a concern with it being a technology and less of a concern with it being code and backed up by a physical network and backed up by mining and backed up by energy and so on and so forth, because I don't think Semler's trying to say that they're anything but what they are. They are bolstering, but they just happen to be bolstering their balance sheet with Bitcoin. In the case of MicroStrategy, to flip back to it, I think that from a tech standpoint, Bitcoin and tech go hand in hand. It's just that people are having a hard time differentiating the two, because I think it's human nature to try to compartmentalize things and to categorize things. But Bitcoin, with all of its qualities, it's not just one thing. And because it's not one thing, that's what makes it singular in kind. And it's a very, very tough juxtaposition for people to dance through, I think, when they're coming at it with a very, very strongly hinged traditional finance lens. So, you know, again, I don't think it matters. I think it's something that should definitely be considered and definitely should be discussed. But in my mind, QQQ inclusion opens the door for S&P 500 inclusion more succinctly than anything else. If they were not to get included in QQQ and it was very, very definitive, I still say it doesn't matter, but then I would also have questions and concerns about S&P 500. I don't think that they're going to be excluded. I think that they're going to get into QQQ, and I think they're going to get into S&P 500. I don't think S&P is going to happen as soon as some people are anticipating, but it's still going to happen. And I think that as this thing scales, it's going to be very, very hard to ignore what MicroStrategy has done. And then that's where that fundamental redefinition of terms and kind and scale and classifications, I think, really starts to happen in a very, very fundamental way. Because just saying that Bitcoin's an asset, I think it's cutting up like half of the value off of it. It is not just an asset. It's digital property. It's an asset. It is tech. It is code. It is all of that, right? And I think we'll be pigeonholing ourselves if we just try to say it's just one thing.
Thank you for that, Adrian. AC, Mike, Yomar, or Brandon, do you guys have a question?
I have a question, and thanks for having me up, guys. It might be a little bit simple, but I'm curious to get, you know, the opinions of all the experts that are here on this panel. You know, I imagine there's some people listening that might be relatively new to all of this. So I'm just curious, because I talk about this with, you know, whether it's my followers or my colleagues or my friends or family, like, how do you think about exposure to Bitcoin versus MicroStrategy as a percentage of, you know, the average investor's portfolio? And then I guess my follow-up to that question would be, is there ever a future where you see yourself, or you think it may be smart to actually just pivot more into Bitcoin? You know, let's zoom out a few years, MicroStrategy rips. And if not, why not?
Ben, do you want to go first on this, or should I?
Sure. Yeah. So, And AC posted something somewhere out there on the internet where he had this, basically this pyramid view of Bitcoin being kind of the base layer of the pyramid and then having MicroStrategy a little further up and then some of the derivatives a little further up. I thought that was a pretty good image there. I always tell people to start with Bitcoin because if you don't understand Bitcoin first, you're never going to understand MicroStrategy. So Bitcoin's always the foundational part of the portfolio to me. It was the foundational part of mine. Now that doesn't mean MicroStrategy is not catching up quickly because it's had a lot of success and I don't penalize the winners in my portfolio by selling them off to, you know, buy something different. So I allow it to expand because it's having success. But, you know, for everyone, you know, investment philosophies are pretty unique to individuals and individuals' needs. And it depends on how long you can tie up the capital, right? If it's long-term capital that you don't need, that's one thing. If it's short term, then you've got to be a little more cautious in terms of what you're investing. I will tell you that Bitcoin originally made up probably in the early days, it was probably greater than 50% of my investments at that time. MicroStrategy, when I first allocated, probably made up 5 to 10 originally. And it's been very successful. So it's grown significantly from that point, but you know, we get a little desensitized in the MicroStrategy world and we try to keep a level head for a lot of people because returns start to generate expectations in your investments. And that's a little bit difficult to manage sometimes because when you've got an asset like MicroStrategy that's been, you know, giving you returns in the hundreds of percent a year, you start to look at the rest of your portfolio in a very strange way, right? And it used to be that the returns that Bitcoin was providing were well more than enough. And for any traditional portfolio, they still are. And what I've found over time is that Bitcoin's actually become the most peaceful part of my portfolio. It's the part that I really don't have to pay any attention to because it's there. I know it's there. It's always performed for me. I don't believe it's going to stop performing for me. So I sleep just fine at night having a very strong allocation to Bitcoin directly, right? I think it's a very powerful asset. I see a really, really big future for Bitcoin, so I don't spend any time worrying about it. The MicroStrategy that I own kind of can serve a different purpose. And when you own an asset like MicroStrategy, you have to understand all the uses and all the value propositions that it can bring to you as an individual. And one of the things we talk about a lot is there's something called selling calls. Right? Selling covered calls, which means that I have, you know, say 100 shares of MicroStrategy and I can go sell somebody an option to purchase those from me at a future price. So if price is at 400, I can sell a covered call giving someone the right to buy my shares. I would lose my shares if it hit this price of say $700. And I say I can live with it if I lost it, but if it doesn't get to $700, I keep the premium. One of the things that's unique about MicroStrategy is because it's so volatile, the premium on those assets is really, really high. So you can sell someone the opportunity to buy those shares from you in the future, sometimes more than 100% out of the money in the next 3 months, right? So the stock would double, you would get all the value of the doubling, and they pay you a very high premium for that right to be able to buy your shares, and you still get to keep that premium. And we won't get into all the mechanics of that, but it's interesting to note that what that does for a lot of people, if they've been investing in MicroStrategy for a long time, is it creates an opportunity to use that asset to generate income if they need it to. And sometimes if they've been invested in MicroStrategy for a long time and they have a substantial amount of shares, that can mean it generates enough income for you to pay college tuition, to buy a car, right, to do really significant things because of how quickly MicroStrategy has grown. So I like MicroStrategy as a part of my portfolio because it has that use case for me. And I'm not going to use it now because I think that there's still a really big future for Bitcoin. So, you know, I'm trying to keep my exposure to Bitcoin in kind of a leveraged way through MicroStrategy while understanding that I've got time to start kind of perfecting the use cases when I will use that tool to generate income for my life, right? I mean, we have all these investments, but you do have to focus on living your life today too, right? So I know a lot of people do the, you know, I'm going to buy something and I'm going to die with it. That's not my philosophy. I think that to the extent you can use the success of your assets to enhance your life, to enhance your family's life, to have more more fun with family and friends. I mean, there's nothing altruistic about, you know, dying with your Bitcoin or holding your investments to zero. Like that's just not a real good mindset, because it can really take away from really awesome opportunities that you have today because you were right about something early. So I don't encourage people to necessarily go in with that mindset. I think it's important to reap the rewards all throughout your life of the successes that you have, and make sure that you're not, you know, deferring all your enjoyment to later, because you don't know if later's coming or not, right? I'm sure the veteran community knows that better than anybody. But it's one of those things that you really do have to create a personal philosophy around to make sure that you take the time to enjoy your successes along the way.
And for me, if you still would like me to answer the question with regards to Bitcoin versus MicroStrategy, my Bitcoin holdings are still significantly larger than my MicroStrategy holdings, but that gap is closed at a frightening rate because of just how MicroStrategy has done. And to Ben's point, one of the main reasons why I'm still currently working, and I'm still working 60, 70 hours a week, is not because I have to, it's because I've now changed my relationship with money. I now see my income from my consulting work as capital. And then I'm thinking of different ways to allocate that capital, right? So a lot of it's going towards MicroStrategy, and a lot of it's going towards Bitcoin. A lot of it's going to, some of it's going towards like other plays like Semler Scientific. I have some plays in miners and whatnot, but basically my entire portfolio, with the exception of NVIDIA, is Bitcoin centric. Now I say that for this reason. When it comes to MicroStrategy, to what Ben was touching on, he and I discussed this for like months before I decided to do it. I got lit up in options back in like 2017, 2018. I'm talking bullet holes, flames, destruction, right? So I said to myself, I would never, ever, ever, ever touch options ever again at that point. But then MicroStrategy comes along, right? And it really changes your perspective when you start to see those premiums that you can get. So now my play is to get my hands on as many shares as possible. I'm somewhat price agnostic. As long as I'm not paying $2,000 a share, I'm fine. And I'm doing that because I've started leveraging the options play and leveraging the kind of premiums that you can get. And like Ben was explaining, it is a very, I'm not going to say easy way, but it's a very powerful way to weaponize your holdings. If you buy at, you know, 250 and you go to an options contract that's a few months out for 500, and you have a significant number of shares, you're collecting that premium. If you sell at 500, oh no, you've doubled your money, and then you could just buy back in. If you don't, you keep that premium and you move on to the next contract. And that is something that someone can do at a very, very reasonable pace, whether they're more aggressive, whether they're less aggressive, to make auxiliary income to the point where, like Ben was mentioning, it can offset other expenses in life, and you can look to it to leverage it in different ways, right? Or you can leverage it back into MicroStrategy, leverage that premium back into MicroStrategy and increase your holdings even more and repeat the process over and over again to do your own sort of miniature flywheel. But my goal is to get it to the point where my holdings are enough that I can essentially substitute a contract that I have with one of my clients, right? So if that number is X amount of dollars a year, can I get to the point where I'm using options and these contracts and leveraging my holdings to replace that? And once I get to that level, that's where I'm going to start having conversations about, you know, real lifestyle changes and whether or not I want to keep working at this clip, whether or not I want to retire early, whether or not I want to really take like a few years off of work. And that is why I've become such a MicroStrategy bull, because it's really facilitating those conversations. With Bitcoin, could I have done that? Sure. But I'm very, very particular about my Bitcoin holdings just because of what I've had to go through to hold them. MicroStrategy now gives me a way to weaponize my investments while still getting Bitcoin exposure, while leveraging it in so many different ways. And that's why Saylor has been saying volatility is vitality. That volatility has opened the door for many, many people to leverage it in many, many different ways. And once more people get onto that, I think the doors really, really open up wide, and this play becomes something truly legendary.
That was beautiful. Thank you both, Ben and Adrian, for the thoughtful responses. Ben, I love what you said about, you know, making sure to enjoy, you know, enjoy yourself while you're still here, and, you know, as part of an investing thesis. And Adrian, you know, really love what you said about the mindset shift around how you viewed the consulting work that you're doing, and actually just using that as capital to fuel, you know, all the other investments you're making. So, thank you both. Awesome panel.
Yeah, thank you, gentlemen, and thank you, Brandon, for the great question. Mike, I see you have your hand up, sir.
Yeah, I don't have a question for really anybody here, but I just wanted to say I appreciate what Ben and Adrian in particular, what you guys brought to the conversation today, and then also like Dr. Lewis, Yomar, obviously, and then Bob, like all you guys up on stage, like I really appreciate you guys coming and kind of talking like a lot of this. I guess I would say financial legalese around like the Bitcoin mining topic, because like personally I'm not somebody who has a whole lot of experience in that. And then one thing I was thinking for the future, because I would love for you guys to come back, because this has been an awesome conversation. One thing that we could talk about, I think, would be like futures and forward curves and how that affects Bitcoin mining. And then also like Adrian, if you would be interested in talking about like kind of like going into like a deep dive on options, so like a lot of our vets could like understand and get a little bit more financialized and financially educated, I think that would be awesome, because like I'll, like speaking from personal experience, and a lot of us up here on stage that are part of the Bitcoin vets, there isn't a whole lot of actual what I would call real financial education for the veterans. They just kind of like give you like a PowerPoint that's poorly presented and poorly displayed, and nobody's really actually interested in helping out the veterans understand how they could get their money to go farther so they can get more Bitcoin. So I just wanted to say I appreciate you guys, and I actually have breakfast waiting, so I am going to hop off, and again, thank you for being a part of this.
Well, yeah, it was my pleasure. I would be open to that. I would say that Ben is far more versed in options than I am. And we have a few other guys that I can think of that we can maybe bring into the conversation that are very, very option savvy. So, yeah, that could be something that we can talk about in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to kick you guys off yet. If I can hold on to you for a little longer, are you guys still good on time?
Yep, I'm good.
I'm good.
All right, perfect. We do a video podcast every Tuesday night, so maybe we can get you guys to come on that. So it'll be a little bit longer. And so it might be a little bit better to talk about that other stuff. But for right now, I want to FASB accounting. A lot of people speculated that Saylor might, adopt it earlier in the year. But it looks like he only has until the end of December, or does it roll into Q1 before he has to adopt it? And what implications does that have for MicroStrategy when he does?
Yeah, so FASB fair value accounting, really all people need to understand about what that means is that they're basically going to be able to realize gains. And when I say realize, I don't mean by selling them. I mean on their financial statements. You're going to see the appreciation of the Bitcoin value show up in the net income of MicroStrategy going forward, and the losses, right? It goes both ways. So far, the accounting rules have been very against companies holding Bitcoin, where all they could do was take losses on it. So you'd see, you know, every quarter MicroStrategy was posting these massive losses over and over again. And that was because they could only mark down the value of the Bitcoin. They could never mark it back up, even though they're well in the money. So FASB fair value accounting changes that. It makes it a much more fair way for companies to account for their Bitcoin. What people are really looking for with FASB fair value, which becomes fully effective January 1st. So it's possible for MicroStrategy to adopt on their Q4 earnings, but they've pretty well indicated that they're going to adopt starting in 2025, which means we really wouldn't see that hit the financials probably until late April, early May, when they release their 2025 Q1 earnings. That'll probably be the first time that we see it. And it's causing a lot of conversations right now because one, it's going to be this weird shock to the market as long as Bitcoin continues to perform or hold its value from where it's at, where they're going to show a really big earnings per share. And that's going to catch a lot of people's attention because it's been very easy for people to dismiss MicroStrategy right now because their income statement always shows losses. But when that happens, it's going to show this really large earnings per share gain. And that's going to capture the attention of a lot of investors that might not be paying attention, right? Like while we're in a small echo chamber out here on X, this is probably like the most engaged space around MicroStrategy. If you talk to other people that you know, I bet they've still absolutely never heard of it, right? It's still shocking how many people have no idea about Bitcoin. So it's still a very small community that's even talking about this. But when that change happens, it makes it very easy for companies to go buy Bitcoin directly because they now understand the accounting for it. They get to treat it like they would any of these other assets that they hold. So there's questions out there on what it means from a tax perspective. And I think that's part of the reason why they're still delaying it until Q1 is because you've got a new administration coming in that's more favorable towards Bitcoin and digital assets in general. And I think they're trying to see what direction some of those policies that are in place are going to take, because people right now are focusing on things like the corporate alternative minimum tax and what that would mean for Bitcoin on MicroStrategy's balance sheet. So we'll see it play out, but I really personally don't expect to see it probably until their April or May, whenever they release their earnings for Q1. That's when I'm expecting it to show up.
Yeah, and the once that gain hits, I think it's going to catch a lot of people off guard. I've been doing calcs, and without the tax considerations, and I should have the spreadsheet in front of me. It's over $100 per share of unrealized gain. But that's without taking the tax considerations into play. So once that really hits, and once the understanding of just what Saylor has done and how it's going to impact their balance sheet and how it's going to impact their valuations going forward, I anticipate that 2025 is going to be a very, very explosive year for MicroStrategy. This is not financial advice. This is not me endorsing it. This is just me saying this is why I'm in the stock. And this is why a lot of us in the community, the MicroStrategy community, and the True North group, the guys that you know, Ben and I have gotten together with and we do streams with, are so bullish on the stock. There's just so many different catalysts and there's just so many different things that the market is just not aware of as yet that they're going to be made aware of in short order.
Thank you for that explanation. AC, I know you have some questions. You want to fire away?
Yeah, thanks, Coleman. And hey, thanks to Ben, Adrian, DR, and the whole True North crew. Up front, I just want to say I love the open source ethos of information you guys are putting out there. You know, it's pure signal and in a ton of noise. So I got two questions, one for Adrian and one for DR. For Adrian, it's funny that there's two Adrians on here, both me and you. But can you share your top MSTR Steelman argument? You know, I've heard you on a couple different spaces in the past, and I think you have some of the best takes on, you know, what are the potential pitfalls associated with MicroStrategy. And then for DR, you mentioned mining earlier. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, what we've seen recently with Mara as well as Riot implementing a Bitcoin strategy.
DR, you haven't talked in a while. You go first on the mining, then I'll come in on the Steelman, other side of the coin arguments.
When you got smart people in the room, let them talk. I don't mind being the back burner to you and Ben. You did a great job breaking these things down. And honestly, I don't really have much to add. As it relates to miners, specifically I'll talk to Mara. And I'll go that way over Riot, AC, just because, you know, we've seen Mara play out a little bit more. Riot is just kind of unfolding with the announcement of the note that's unfolding now. You know, they just released the terms this morning. But with Mara, we've seen them raise a series of notes now. They've done two of them at $1 billion. Also at a 0% coupon, so incredibly favorable terms, and they set them out to 2030. So very clearly have tipped their hand. They are running the MicroStrategy playbook. And by that, I mean that their last quarterly earnings, they start using all sorts of terms like Bitcoin yield, Bitcoin per share, straight from the MicroStrategy handbook. They renamed themselves about 5 months ago to Mara Holdings and a Bitcoin treasury holding company. They've completely embraced it. What's interesting is that they can run that playbook pretty well. And as of today, they're now over 40,000 Bitcoin, which is the second largest public company behind MicroStrategy. But they do something Sailor and MicroStrategy can't. They mine it at less than spot or what you can buy it for. So that provides a very interesting twist. Not only are they selling convertible bonds at a 0% coupon at a good premium, much like we see with MicroStrategy and Sailor, and adding Bitcoin straight on the treasury, and $2 billion is a lot of Bitcoin, they're also mining about 9,000 a month. And while they may not be super profitable, even mining it at 80 or 85,000, it's a lot less than the 95 or 100,000 to buy it. So they're able to add 10 to 15,000 Bitcoin a year under what their current run rate is going to accelerate to here to end the year at a price that's below what anyone else can replicate with the MicroStrategy playbook. So if you have notes plus self-mining and self-mining coming at a premium, the downside there, of course, to be able to run that strategy with the twist of undercutting spot is they have to hit the ATM to keep operations going because they're keeping the fruits of their labor. They're keeping their Bitcoin. They're not selling it. Some companies, they mine it, they sell it. That's how they pay their bills. If they're not doing that, then they are, of course, issuing shares out. So the ATM is being worked in tandem with the notes and the self-mining. So it's very MicroStrategy-like. And I am very attracted to the value proposition of being able to mine it for a fraction of the cost. As Bitcoin continues to accelerate, that delta, that margin continues to widen. I think Mara has a really interesting play that no one else in the sector can do except for, as you mentioned, Riot or other companies who mine it, who choose to replicate it. How that's going to play out is they continue, though, to not run a profitable tech company like MicroStrategy does, but actually burn through equity or shares to keep operations going is the twist. So I'm optimistic, but if I'm looking for a treasury strategy play, and that's what I converted my IRA back to Ben's point, Bitcoin is first. I use an IRA that I accumulated as an educator that I can't buy Bitcoin with and don't want to cash out. So I'm happy to put that into proxy plays to get Bitcoin exposure like MicroStrategy and miners. And MicroStrategy is still to me the dominant and the relatively easier and safer play. But I'm really intrigued with the miners becoming more holding companies. I think it's definitely going to be replicated by more than just Riot. And by the way, Hut 8 also dropped an ATM with the proceeds going to buy Bitcoin. So not quite a note strategy, but they're literally coming out with a $400 million ATM with the express purpose of adding Bitcoin. So miners are going to be running their own versions of this playbook. I think that you see the ripple effect of MicroStrategy play out all throughout the space, whether it be Dylan LeClaire, Metaplanet, Semler, Genius Corp. You know, Sailor is hopefully going to orange pill Microsoft today. They have that meeting this afternoon. We'll see how it goes. But hey, great question. And I think Mara, you know, they can do one thing that people buying it with notes can't. They can mine it for less. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so DR's points are fantastic. I'll say one thing on it there, cause he and I have done a lot of work in the mining space together. We've hosted, DR, I forget what number it was. Was it like 15, 16 different spaces with different miners? With that, I think that we're going to have a interesting, I call it the MicroStrategy effect on the miners, just like DR pointed out, in the sense that many of them are going to weaponize their balance sheets and weaponize the ability for them to survive in the coming downturns with using a Sailor-esque approach, to make that downturn in mining that inevitably comes less painful. And I also think we have the miners that are doing the AI plays. And I think if one miner is able to do an AI vertical, a traditional mining vertical, and the MicroStrategy-esque vertical, I think they're going to turn out to be a big winner. So that's the one I'm waiting for. I just wanted to make sure I said that because DR brought up all those amazing points. Secondly, now to the Steelman arguments with regards to MicroStrategy. I'll just pick a couple off the top of my head. And if I miss one that you wanted me to talk about, please feel free to ask. But one of the ones that is the most annoying for me, but that I've tried my best to take, the opposite approach on just to make sure that I understand it, is the notion that you're paying a premium for your Bitcoin. Now, buying MicroStrategy. Now, as you know, Ben briefly touched on, and as I've been screaming from the rooftops for a while, the term Bitcoin proxy I think is misleading people. I think we need to really switch that nomenclature to Bitcoin security or Bitcoin equities, because proxy gives a notion that you have some kind of a claim to the underlying Bitcoin, right? So when we do Bitcoin per share or Bitcoin yield, when we see that metric, it is very easy for a less savvy investor or just a newer investor, or perhaps an investor that is very entrenched in a traditional view, to say to themselves, oh, so when I buy MicroStrategy, I'm getting a proportionate amount of Bitcoin per share, therefore, why wouldn't I just buy Bitcoin? The problem with that argument is that, one, you do not have an underlying claim to the asset of Bitcoin when you buy MicroStrategy shares. Two, Bitcoin yield and Bitcoin per share are KPIs. They're not a gauge for ROI, traditionally, is what I would try to differentiate them. They are metrics that allow you to see the return on investment on some level for what you're putting into MicroStrategy, but MicroStrategy has a functioning business on top of their Bitcoin play, right, which is servicing the debt. So to say that you're just paying a premium for MicroStrategy, for Bitcoin, by buying MicroStrategy, is ignoring the fact that their software business is what's servicing the debt. Leading on from that, I think people underestimate the fact that the software business, I still think, can grow. And I say that because, do we really think that MicroStrategy is going to go to 200 million, 250 million, a half trillion, and $1 trillion market cap, and the software business is just going to get nothing? I think that it's a very, very likely perspective that the software business does grow by happenstance, at the very, very least. If not grow aggressively, because they're getting more interest in their business because their cachet is growing. One of the things that Saylor said is they're not getting a lot of attention going up against Azure, going up against Amazon Web Services, going up against the giants. They're just getting swallowed up. And while they weren't completely unprofitable, they were dying a slow death. I think that can pivot with the growth of MicroStrategy from a market cap and market exposure standpoint because of this Bitcoin treasury play that they're doing. So that's one of the arguments that I like to kind of do away with.
Adrian, do you think it's more likely that that comes from just investing in the existing business to stay competitive? Do you think it comes through acquisition?
I think it could, and again, this is just me spitballing and speaking purely theoretically. I think it could come from internal investment. I think it could come from acquisition. I think it could come from a growing client base. Many people haven't even heard of MicroStrategy as a company. So how will they hear of the services that they offer? It's a two-sided coin, right? It's not just hearing about MicroStrategy in terms of an investment opportunity. It's hearing about MicroStrategy in terms of what do they do. And as someone that works in data integrations, AI on a daily basis, I'm telling you, there are a lot of crappy solutions out there that companies are using because they don't have a better option. If MicroStrategy comes up with a better option, which I think they do have in many ways, they can grow that side of the business. I'm not saying it's going to become an industry giant by any means, but I'm saying that just the impetus to poo-poo the software side of the business because it hasn't been doing well and hasn't been growing is short-sighted. And the growth that they're experiencing right now is going to gain them more exposure, but that exposure, you cannot say that's just going to be in one venue. It's not just going to be in, oh, they're doing a Bitcoin treasury play. We don't know what the hell else they do. I don't think that's very, very wise. Did that answer your question?
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. And some of the other arguments that you typically hear besides that one are, you know, Ben already touched on this very, very well, the whole NAV argument. I release NAV worksheets just because people want to see it. And I think people should have a thorough understanding of what NAV is and how to properly calculate it before they go saying that it is a primary valuation metric for MicroStrategy and it has any say into whether the company is overvalued or undervalued. What I will say on that is many people, and these are many prominent people, are calculating NAV incorrectly. They're either using Bitcoin holdings only, or they are using the wrong share counts, or they're using a outdated amounts for debts and liabilities. And it is a very, very frustrating thing to see, because like others have mentioned, there's a lot of noise and not a lot of signal. So one of the reasons I focus on NAV is because it allows me to get some signal out. I still don't think it's something that should be the primary focus. However, I think people need to have a thorough understanding of what NAV is. And I'm telling you here that many people that are discussing NAV and that are displaying NAV and that are talking about what NAV should be are actually don't know what the hell they're talking about. So be very, very careful about who you listen to in this space, because there are a lot of people with pretty large followings that are quite uninformed when you really drill down into what they're saying. And, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Adrian, I think to that point, it's really good. And maybe you can speak to this too, but just a lot of people are still steeped in their old methodology where they're looking at the value of the balance sheet and not, you know, people truly misunderstand this Bitcoin yield that, I think has been explained, but, people really need to concentrate in on, as it relates to MicroStrategy and the type of yield that they're actually generating and what that means.
Yes. And so here's where I'll take the contrarian stance on that. For me, Bitcoin holdings per share is more valuable than the Bitcoin yield. If I'm just using one, if I have to pick one metric, I would say that the Bitcoin holdings per share for me is more valuable. And I say that because it's one, easier to digest, and two, if you think of it in terms of when Bitcoin accretes in value, the Bitcoin per share that you have in your holdings will accrete in value as well. And you can think of it sort of like a form of earnings, I guess you can say, when you're assessing MicroStrategy as a investment vehicle, right? So one of the main things that stands out to me in the terms of MicroStrategy's valuation and why I think it's grossly undervalued, and we will take both sides of the coin here, if we focus on the people that are just saying it's only the Bitcoin, we don't care about the software business, we don't care about anything else, NAV and valuation should be driven by Bitcoin, they should only have a 1x NAV. Okay, let's take that stance. Bitcoin by itself is going to demand a premium in the markets. You can just say Bitcoin is worth $100,000, you have 10 Bitcoin, you have 1 million on your balance sheet, that's it. However, that underestimates the volatility that Bitcoin can bring to bear. So you're essentially saying that the company should only be valued on Bitcoin without understanding the fact that Bitcoin has ripped up throughout the years without warning, and you could be caught on the wrong side of that trade thinking that you have a full understanding of what Bitcoin can do. Many of the people saying that don't even have a thorough understanding of Bitcoin. They do not have a thorough understanding of what Bitcoin's use case is, and I can say that because they have such a singular focus. They're not thinking about Bitcoin as a whole and the impact it can have on a company's balance sheet in terms of market perception, not just in terms of dollars and cents. If I flip it over to the other argument where I'm more closely aligned in the sense that MicroStrategy is undervalued because of these factors, you have the Bitcoin in the balance sheet, you have the operating business, you have the fact that every single business operates on a multiple. Some businesses, I'm not going to say which ones, have multiples that are completely cartoonish for what they do in the industry. Multiples of 15, 20, 25, 30 for putting it delicately, no reason whatsoever other than the fact that that's how the market trades them. Now, markets are forward-looking. The market is not telling you what MicroStrategy is worth today. They're trying to tell you what it's going to be worth in 12, 18, 24 months. With that said, all of these people that are trying to say that MicroStrategy is a Ponzi scheme or that MicroStrategy is overvalued and so on and so forth, do you really want to take the risk of being on the wrong side of the trade when the market catches up to this? The market has not caught up yet. A 3x multiple, well, actually, as of this morning, based on my sheet, it's more like a 2.32 multiple or 2.66 multiple fully diluted. That is not an accurate representation of what this stock can do, just based on the options market alone and the sheer volatility that we see and the premiums that we're seeing there. So when this thing rips up and you're seeing a 4, 5, 6 multiple and you've missed out on the opportunity because you've been so dogmatic in your assessment of it, I think that many people are going to be rather upset with themselves, which is what I think a lot of the criticism for MicroStrategy is now. You missed the trade, you're mad about it, now you're trying to talk it down. And because there's vitriol in the conversation, it's not criticism. It's vitriol. It's insulting. It's belittling the people that are investing in it. Once I see that kind of narrative taking hold, I know you're mad that you missed the trade. I've heard it about Bitcoin for about 12 years now. So I take the opposite end, because it helps me test my thesis. But in doing that, it's only made me more concrete in my thesis. And I hope that long-winded soliloquy answered your questions.
So, Adrian or Ben, I've got a question for you, because I've got a lot of questions in the back channels trying to predict where MicroStrategy shares are going to be sitting, you know, next summer or the end of 25. We don't focus on price here on Bitcoin price, or really with MicroStrategy. And I'm not going to hold you to your predictions, but if you're going to guess, where do you think this is going to be sitting, you know, end of summer of 25 or end of year 25?
Yeah, so, yeah, like you guys, I don't tend to do a lot on price. I try to focus more on the strategy and how I think that they can execute. You know, the thing I'll say is it can vary wildly depending on what happens over the next 6 months. If we start to see a strategic reserve for the United States become a reality, that's going to be a very different price prediction than if that doesn't come to fruition. So part of me thinks that we're just going to have to sit and wait and see what happens. If that happens, you know, I think we're many multiples higher than we are now, right? Because I think when the United States shows up and you've got a buyer in the Bitcoin market that's completely price agnostic, and not in the way of they just don't care about the price. They literally don't have to care about the price because they create the currency they'll be buying it in. So it makes no difference to them. If they're buying Bitcoin, it's a defensive move, right? They're defending against, you know, things like BRICS nations accumulating so much Bitcoin that they start to force global trade settlement in it, and it destabilizes the dollar as a reserve asset because now other countries are being forced to interact with some of these big guys using Bitcoin instead of the US dollar. So it minimizes the amount of reserves they have to hold. So if you get the US in the market as a defensive buyer of Bitcoin, buying it just because they need to have enough to keep their standing globally, I can't even really come up with a prediction for what that looks like, because that's entirely a function of how much supply is going to be available to them at that time. And obviously that price impact for Bitcoin trickles down to MicroStrategy in a big way because of the scale that they have. So I would say in that scenario, you know, many multiples higher, but I think no matter what, with the rate that Sailor's accumulating and the adoption Bitcoin's seeing on its own, independent of the US getting involved or not, I see some pretty strong growth trajectory coming into the end of the summer next year, because 2025, whether you subscribe to cycle theory and you think that that's the biggest year of the 4-year cycle like it's traditionally been, or whether you're just looking at the adoption metrics globally and who's using it now and how many people are acquiring it as permanent capital to support their businesses or their countries, I think that there's a really bright future there for Bitcoin. So I'm a big believer that Bitcoin has a big year in 2025, and because of that, MicroStrategy has a big year. But for now, I'm just focused on staying very long Bitcoin, and I'll let the prices fall where they may.
And for me, I throw out price predictions just because I like to think of different ways that things can play out. So I'll answer this question in two, maybe three parts, but I'll try to keep them very, very quick. To Ben's point, if you look at cycle theory, if you just look at the seasonality of the cycles for Bitcoin, if we mimic what we did last cycle, so between 2020, which would be this year, and 2021, which would be next year, 2025, we're looking at a Bitcoin price of about $400,000, right? That's if we mimic it by the end of next year. That said, I have a very simple worksheet that I've put out periodically for a MicroStrategy NAV expansion that assumes a proportionate increase in market cap based on Bitcoin price and Bitcoin holdings. if MicroStrategy were to do nothing as of right now with their Bitcoin holdings, and if market sentiment were to keep pricing it where it is, a $400,000 Bitcoin means a MicroStrategy price of about $1,500 end of next year, right? Now, where if you throw a multiple on top of that, this is where Ben's point about a strategic reserve, you know, nation state players coming in and real both defensive frenzy and offensive frenzy come in. So you have nation states defending themselves against not being last at the table. And you have an offensive frenzy in the sense that nation states are also printing money to buy Bitcoin. And they don't even care about the price because of that. If you throw a multiple on top of that, at a 2x multiple, it's 1500. At about a 2.51 multiple, it's at 1500. When you get to 3, 4, 5, and 6, which is what it topped out at, you know, last cycle, you're getting to prices between $4,500 and $6,718 per share end of next year. And that's assuming no stock splits, that's assuming nothing else. I'm not throwing that out there as a prediction. I'm just throwing it out there to say that if you just play around with some numbers and you take some very conservative assumptions, number go up is what I'm getting at. So, next year is going to be very, very interesting. If MicroStrategy hits $2,000 a share, I'm happy. If it hits $1,000 a share, I'm happy. If it hits $6,000 a share, I'm not responsible for my behavior at that point, but I'm just letting you know that, you know, this thing can go a variety of different ways.
I appreciate that, Adrian. And, I think I follow along with you. I think this price, I think a bear case is probably right around $1,500. When you look at everything going on in the world, with the different countries and their posturing, you know, you had Putin come out last week and said, no one can stop Bitcoin. It's unstoppable. You had, like one of his finance ministers come in and state yesterday that he wanted to create a strategic, Bitcoin reserve in Russia. So his position in power would be very similar to like Senator Lummis in Wyoming. So you're starting to get this different posturing, and Eric Trump, was speaking this morning at Bitcoin, MENA. And on there, the two biggest takeaways I saw during his keynote, presentation was he wanted to make Bitcoin, non-taxable for transactions, and that they, his father, Trump, is still, dedicated to adding Bitcoin to the treasury. So again, I know Polymarket only has like a 25, 26% chance of us, of this thing happening. But I put the odds at a lot higher. Just looking at everything going on around the globe, you know, Britain came out and said that they're going to allow their shadow banks to remain in secret if they need to tap into the liquidity market. So again, I think your prediction of, $5,000-$6,000 is probably going to be pretty accurate on a conservative level, for the future. So that's just kind of my take on it.
Well, so here's the thing with the non-taxable piece of the puzzle. If for some reason, the capital gains on Bitcoin go away or are significantly reduced, I think that's another catalyst. For me, it would be at least, because I would see that as a reason to dump as much capital as I possibly can into Bitcoin, because I've already handled the volatility. So another volatile cycle, knowing full well that cap gains have been reduced or eliminated, to me, is an opportunity I couldn't pass up. And I think that that would be true for many investors, perhaps even many large-scale investors as well.
Yeah. And then you don't even get into the fact, like, again, we were talking about, you know, what could happen to the price of Bitcoin and their sats per share, even if it just remained flat. Saylor wanted, he announced beginning of November, he wanted to raise $42 billion over the next 3 years. He's tapped in over a third of that in the last 40 days. So again, your price predictions were based on just it staying flat right now at the sats per share price. And so I think we all kind of know that he's going to deploy all capital available as quickly as he can to try and front run these nations and get as much as he can before it just really becomes more difficult. So.
Well, I jokingly said that, he'll be done in 3 to 6 months. And, I don't think that's impossible. I think in 6, maybe 7 months, he could be close to peeling that thing entirely off just because of how aggressive he's being. So yeah, interesting times ahead for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're spot on with that. I think if he makes it a whole year, it'll shock a lot of people. I think he deploys it a lot quicker. We went a little bit further than we normally do, so we're going to start wrapping up the show. AC, Bob, did you have any final questions you wanted to ask Ben, Adrian, or DR? I'm going to take your silence as a no. Ben, Adrian, DR, do you guys have any final comments you wanted to make before we start wrapping up? Where's the best place we can send people to follow you, to support your work?
Yeah, I'll just say thank you guys so much for having me today and having Adrian and DR as well. Love what you guys have been doing here. I've been on a lot of these spaces. You guys get some really awesome content out here. So love being able to be a part of supporting what you guys are doing. This is really the only place you're going to find me is on X. This is really the only place that I'm going to be doing any of my analysis. And there's another X account called MicroStrategy True North. We do live streams every Wednesday where we pretty much only talk about MicroStrategy and Bitcoin. So if you've got some time late on a Wednesday night, come join us. We have some really fun conversations there, and it's kind of a rotating group of people that join those. So thank you. Thank you for having me.
Similarly to Ben, you'll find me here on X. I'm also part of the MicroStrategy True North group, so I would definitely say to check that out. We have some fantastic conversations. And thank you very much for having me up. I thought this was a great conversation. I was very, very humbled by the invite. I greatly respect veterans. My brother is a veteran of over 25 years. So I'm a big advocate of helping the veteran community in any way that I can. If it's with knowledge, it's with knowledge. So I will do that whenever you guys deem me worthy of coming up again. I'll be happy to do it. And great conversation overall.
Hey guys, just thanks for having me. Love the mission, love the group, love the content you guys put out. Ben and Adrian were probably the best two guests I could think of to have on talk about this subject, and they certainly didn't disappoint. I was happy to be a fly on the wall. I think anytime you have smart people talking, you run into the room, you learn what you can. And today was another example of that for me. You can just find me on X. Adrian and I also have a platform called Alpha Insights here on X. We do long-form interviews with executives and insiders in the Bitcoin space, a lot of miners. We've had on real estate. We've had on Eric Semler. We've had on Leon Wankum. We've had on a lot of just cool Bitcoin-related guests. And we love doing those, you know, up until the holidays. We were kind of in a groove about one a week. But it's just as we take it. I have had the pleasure of having you guys on and Gabe Lord on for Bitcoin Veterans onto our platform. So if you guys are interested in any kind of Bitcoin-related long-form content, we do that as well. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. And I just want to, again, thank all of you guys for taking time out of your morning to spend it with us, and I really appreciate it. And we definitely need to have you back on here. Maybe get you on the video podcast where we can run a little longer and do a little bit more in-depth stuff with some charts and things. So sometimes it's difficult to do that on X spaces. But again, thank you guys so much for tuning. And thanks, everybody who tuned in for us. If this is your first time listening, we do this every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Follow myself, follow the Bitcoin Veteran handles to get notified when our spaces happen. Again, 10 a.m. Eastern time every Monday through Friday. Tomorrow's show is going to be a good show. We're going to talk about Saylor's comments on selling our gold to purchase Bitcoin and kind of the ripple effects, the pros, the cons, how it'll affect our enemies and also affect our allies. So tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. Tonight, we'll have a Bitcoin video podcast with the Bitcoin veterans. It'll be live streamed on X and also on YouTube. It's going to be the founders. They're going to sit down and talk, give us a year-end recap of everything happening, what we did during Operation Gabriel during Hurricane Helene. So that'll be a good one as well. So tune in tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern. But that said, I do appreciate every single person who tuned in, all the comments, all the likes, all the retweets. It does mean a lot to me, and it makes my job a lot easier. And thanks, AC, Bob, and Mike for joining us, and Brandon for asking the questions. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Go enjoy the rest of your day. But don't shitcoin. It's like putting coins under your pillow and getting back old teeth.